Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew.
All homebrewers have a favorite commercial beer, but not everyone can make it. Welcome to the show that teaches you how, where you can challenge two masters, Jameel Zainasheff and Tasty McDole. This is the Jameel Show. Can you brew it? Now here's Jameel.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. Here we are for in the studio for another fine episode of Can You Brew It? I'm here with loyal companion and sidekick.
Trusty companion.
My buddy.
I'm the guy that shows up.
And co-host, the guy that shows up, Mr. Tasty McDole.
It's a pleasure to be here. Believe me, I have nothing else to do right now.
Right, neither do I.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what...
You're unemployed, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Oh. I'm gainfully unemployed.
So what do? Like fish
he
alive?
He prefers to use the word retired.
Retired? Oh, well.
Than unemployed.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I'm just, I'm working on things.
Anything you can talk about, or it's all top secret?
Top
secret. I get you.
Well, yeah. If you some software stuff that we're doing that is
nice.
Beer related, and then
cool.
We've got some. And the funny thing is, somebody was emailing me. A couple of people emailed me. They go, I hear you're making some brewing software. I'm like,
well, you posted an opening for some sort of program.
No, this was before that. So
before
I figured, what the heck? I'll just
the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. Well, my guy in the Netherlands. He's tied up on another project, but I was going to go with people I've worked with for years.
Sure, yeah, known entities. Yeah.
And we're going to try somebody else out new on the iPhone platform, and I might be looking for an Android programmer as well.
Oh, wow!
Made some good progress on Wind Mobile stuff today, so we're going to have some fun. So have some fun with some software that hopefully people will find enjoyable.
I love it. Apps are the future.
That's right.
They are. Everyone will laptops will be a thing of the past in no time.
Everybody will be staring at their phone.
Yeah.
All day long.
Everyone will be Sully in no time. Just walking around staring at
their
phone.
Their heads will get bigger.
Yeah. Walk around looking at that
nobody
phone.
Nobody said it'd be that bad. He doesn't listen to the show, does he? No, he does.
I think it'd be cool to have brewing apps on your phone. What a great idea, Jameel.
Right. Yeah. And also, we're going to be... heading out to Milwaukee, Justin and I, for our sponsor is opening a new store.
Yeah.
How about that?
Nice,
and it,
big
and
one.
From
wow.
the description of it,
superstore.
Yeah, it's like a Costco. It's like a super Walmart or something. The size of this thing.
So what we need is a big box homebrew store.
Right. I think they're going to be selling cars there even. Groceries on one end, cars on the other, and all your homebrew supplies in between.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty excited about that. I think Justin is too, and we're going to go out there, and we're going to be at the Milwaukee store this coming weekend. It's,
we get there Thursday.
Get there Thursday.
So
I'm going to be up for a beer Thursday night if anybody's in the area.
Well,
in case anybody happens to live in around Milwaukee and want a beer Thursday night.
I've already gotten emails from listeners who are either in the area or going to come up for the area. So I'll pass some along to you.
So they want a beer with you. They don't want a beer with me, clearly. Okay, fine. I'll drink alone.
I think
all
they
by
just,
myself.
They're trying to make me feel good because I'm going on this trip with you, but I'm not doing anything. Jameel's going to he's doing a book signing. You're going to do a brewing demonstration on Friday. And then, of course, we're doing your show on Saturday.
Right.
And I'm just going to hang around and shake hands and drink beer, really. So I think they felt bad for me. And they're like, hey, Joe, we like you too.
You'll do what you normally do during the show, which is hang out and drink some beer.
Yeah. Shake hands and drink beer.
Yeah. There you go. Is that what you're doing behind the console there, shaking your hand?
That's what I'm doing, yeah.
I saw the movement, but I wasn't sure what exactly it was.
But please do come out and see us because, you know, we don't make it to the middle of the country very often.
Right, right, right. So. I'm not flying all that way and then having you guys not show up. Yeah. You know, you got to come out. I want to see you guys. I want to say hi. I want to, you know, meet you guys. And, you know, we exchange a lot of emails. You know, we all help each other out on email, but it's nice to do it face by face. So please come out and, you know, change your plans. You know, the dog's sick, the wife's having the kid, the friend's in from out of town, car ran out of gas, and you have a flat tire. I don't care.
Yeah.
Get yourself out there at least one of the days and come say hi. And we'll share a beer and have a good time.
It's really my favorite part of the job. So please do come shake hands.
Well, and it's really nice of Northern Brewer to bring us out there. They have been supporting us for the 3+ years this show's been on. Three, almost coming up on 4 years for this show.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they don't even care all the nutty things you say.
They must not be listening.
They never write us a letter saying, hey, could you tone it down?
At some point, they're going to be like, yeah, I always wondered if they listened, you know?
Yeah.
Do you listen to the show? Yeah, you're still writing the checks. Wow, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
I think the people who listen and the people who write the checks probably two different people.
Yeah, could
you
be.
Know, that's, you know. But
I think so.
You know, even if you can't make it out, make sure you at least get yourself over to their website. Get yourself over to northernbrewer.com and browse through. They got a lot of great stuff, and they have $7.99 shipping on, like, most everything for, like, ridiculously heavy things. So you can buy a ton of stuff, and it's still just $8 for shipping. And, you know, great service, great price, great products. And at the very least, let them know that you appreciate that they support the show. Very important because that's what, you know, keeps the sponsors coming back when they feel like they're getting their money's worth because they got a business to run too. And going to head out to Melbourne in May.
You are now. It's official.
It's official.
All right.
I've got a ticket. I've taken money. So now I'm stuck. I'm going.
Well, they wouldn't accept me, Chad, or Tasty. They said the brewing what?
They needed somebody known.
Brewcasters.
Yeah, what somebody who's popular.
So now Jameel's going.
Right.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You must. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm gonna swing by New Zealand on the way.
Are you?
I'll swing by. Yeah, it's just there. Yeah,
swing by.
It's a cab ride.
Yeah,
you know.
I always go to England on the way.
Just turn the wheel a little to the left as you're heading down that way, and the plane ends up in Auckland.
Yeah.
And I'll be in Auckland for a couple of days, and all listeners are gonna come out. A couple of people I posted on Facebook.
Good.
So, if you're on Facebook, you know, come and find Tasty McDowell, find Justin, find myself, find John Palmer. All the folks were on Facebook and befriend us.
That's right.
You won't get rejected. Don't worry.
I'm going to make you wear a T-shirt in Australia that says, "The Brewing Network made me." I need to get the word out over there.
And what people will come up to me and say, "What did they make you do?"
Yeah, probably something disgusting.
Yeah. What did they make you do?
Yeah.
And there's people they're gonna arrange something. So there's a get together of what is it, Soma or something like that. I'm not sure, but we'll, as it gets nearer, we'll be posting that information. Same thing for Milwaukee. Get on Facebook and check that out, and Twitter, and we'll be posting where we're at and where we're drinking. So we don't mind meeting up with the
that's the point. Certainly, even if it doesn't happen Thursday night, Friday night, I think the deal is after we do our Northern Brewer stuff, we will be going out in the Milwaukee area, and we'll tweet it on the Brewing Network Twitter everywhere we go, so you can come meet us. I don't know what's happening Saturday, other than we'll be at Northern Brewer.
But you got to get yourselves down to Northern Brewer. If you're in that area, make sure you do. Well, and we have here in the studio with us my good dear friend and dear friend of the Brewing Network and many home brewers is the homebrew chef, Sean Paxton.
Howdy.
How you doing there, Paxy?
Doing
Pax
good.
Paxman?
Doing very good.
Yeah, I emailed Paxman today. I thought that was pretty good.
The yeast or...
Yeah, you could have your own yeast, the Paxman.
The Paxman.
It's out there.
Yeast,
Or isn't
yeah, Justin
the
has
Pac-Man.
A yeast.
That one's
it's
a Pac-Man.
It's the crotch man for Justin.
Yeah.
The crotch
man. It won't help your beer any, but yeah, the Pac-Man.
That would be kind of interesting, actually.
Pax did a show with us just yesterday, too. He's pulling a Jameel now. I got him on all sorts of Brewing Network shows.
Doing the back-to-back.
He did the Sunday show with us from Downtown Joe's, which you can download now. Yeah, did a great beer and food episode. And now we got him in here doing Can You Brew It?
I tell you. I get around.
That's what we've heard. You know, especially in the bathroom at the Toronado. It's written on the wall.
They told me they repainted that.
Yeah. Damn it. Repainted with urine, I think.
Oh. Ooh, actually, I brought in some Tornado Bar cookies.
Oh.
Ah.
Is it something I could eat and still be able to drive after I...
Almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We just have too much fun. Well, and speaking of too much fun, we've got another challenge to live up to, right? And... what's our challenge for today, Justin?
All right, we had a call-in challenge, so here you go, fellas. It's a tough one.
Hey, guys. This is Brandon from Nashville. I was calling in. I've always been fascinated by Dogfish Head's 120-minute IPA and their ability to brew this. It seems like there's a lot that could go wrong with that really fast. So their whole technique and the beer really intrigues me. I get a big kick out of opening up this beer for my friends. I like to keep a few vintage bottles around and open them after dinner. I think it's a very good beer. So I know you guys are always up for a big challenge, so let's make some BN Brewing history tonight. I'm going to throw the gauntlet down for you guys. This is a huge beer that I know that has some different brewing techniques. So I'm going to ask you, can you guys brew it? Dogfish Head's 120 IPA. Thanks a lot.
Nice. That's a good challenge. And, you know, funny, we should have Paxton here because he's the one who brewed the beer for this. Odd how it works out. It's like we don't know what the challenge is going to be. Yeah. But somehow it always works out that we have like the beer here and the brewer and big beer, big guy. Well, you know, the first place I had this was in Chicago at the Map Room many years ago.
Oh, yeah, the Map Room.
I was there with a bunch of my Quaff brothers and sisters, and I can't remember why, but I ended up getting a bottle of Dogfish 120, and at that time it was only in 750 mil bottles, and it had like a hand-drawn label that was glued on with a glue stick, and a 750 of this beer. That's a fair amount of alcohol, right?
Half a dozen people drunk.
A straw and just...
And there's only like, three or four of us, I guess, and we were, you know, everybody was taking small pours, and I'm like, well, you know, I paid for this bottle. I'm drinking whatever's left, so I drank me a good 8 ounces of Dogfish 120 at that time, I think. And it's an interesting beer. It's obviously really big. It's got some sweetness to it, but it's also got, enough dryness to keep it from being cloying. Some hoppiness, they hop this thing for, 120 minutes. But, the hops kind of fade or, they're kind of, set into the background a bit by lots of malt and, alcohol and a lot of other things going on. So it ends up surprisingly balanced. And I think that was the thing that shocked me the most the first time I had this was, wow, that's really balanced for what it is. And, how would you describe that beer, Sean?
It's a hard one. I mean, it's almost not like beer at a certain point. I mean, it's so much more alcohol, even though it's somewhat covered up by the sweetness and the hoppiness. It's also a very interesting beer because, at 21%, I mean, it's up there. So a 750 bottle, man, you got your money's worth on that one. I think it's a real interesting, almost more like an aperitif, like the end of a dinner beer. Just like the question kind of came from to have it after dinner. And that's why I've always enjoyed it. I mean, I like a lot of big beers and especially at the end of the evening.
Everything's about dinner to you. That's the thing.
I know. It's that food
thing. How you doing? He's like dinner. what I would say, you're saying it's not, you know, it's a little different than beer in a way, you know, but not so much as like a Sam Adams
Utopias.
That is very little like beer.
Yeah.
This is more like beer than Utopias.
True. Yeah. Very true.
So,
as a counterpoint for people who might not
have had Utopias.
Have had it, so, or 120. So.
Right, right. So
they only brew it a couple times a year, so it's not like there's a whole lot always around.
Yeah.
So I
find that interesting. So a little more balance, I think. And it's got some bitterness and some hops and, you know, to go along with that kind of caramelly alcohol and kind of toffee notes and things like that that come from such a big beer.
Definitely.
Well, it's a great beer, and it's a great challenge for us. I mean, it's a very tricky beer to brew, like Brandon was saying. And we'll see if Paxton, it was his challenge, we'll see if he's able to live up to it. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into kind of, we don't have an interview, unfortunately, but we have interviewed the brewer, both of us have interviewed the brewer on this, so we'll kind of talk about what he told us on how to brew this beer. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, my roommate's gone for the weekend, and I'm wearing something flimsy.
Listen, baby, I told her not to call me after 8. I gotta go.
Who is that? Your girlfriend?
Set up, Doug. Did you guys get the cauldron set up on the altar of my yard?
If you weren't so busy getting booty called, you know that.
All right, I'm using the scroll of Mosher to boil the first decoction.
You took too long. The color is now darkened past the point where you can still call it a pilsner.
This sucks.
I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this, Poindexter Urquell?
Dude, can't you see we're in the middle of a brew session?
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you belch White Labs 833 and crap Simcoe? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Cylon Detecting Three-Hearted Ale and the collector's item Super Alt.
Mine's in mint condition because it's still in the box.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
BN Army members, are you looking for a discount on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. Choose from varieties like Amarillo, Centennial, East Kent Goldings, Holler Tower, Simcoe, Summit, Tomahawk, Warrior, Willamette, and more. And adding new varieties all the time, many for less than $20 a pound. Whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag, all hops are shipped vacuum sealed and frozen straight to you. Nico's Homebrew Supply offers store-wide $5 flat rate shipping and won't waste your money on unnecessary overhead or advertising. They're going bare bones and passing the savings on to you. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. And for a limited time, use coupon code BNARMY at checkout for a Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's N-I-K-O Brew.com for your hops and more. NicoBrew.com, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Now back to the challenge. Can you brew it?
All right, we're back. We're talking Dogfish 120. Tasty McDowell and myself with Sean Paxton here in the room.
It's very tasty. Oh, we're having a cookie.
A snack.
Cookie.
That Sean brought us.
Tasty snacks.
Very tasty.
They are tasty snacks.
Tasty always likes cookies, so...
Tasty likes tasty cookies.
These aren't the kind that mess you up, though. make you fat. That's it.
It messes you up in a different way.
It's a different kind of messed up.
Man, they're rich. It messes you up in a more permanent way.
Permanent way, that's right. These won't wear off in 4 hours.
I like to leave my mark.
Yeah. Good job.
Speaking of leaving marks, you know, I was in the bathroom there, and somebody had explosive diarrhea at one point there. Yeah, they got to clean
on Chad,
underneath the seat lid there every once in a while. You know, somebody left their mark. All right. Well, and, you know, we don't have an interview on this one. And here's the thing. All right. So you guys send in these requests to us. And then, you know, we do what we can to apply some muscle to the breweries and the brewers and get them to do interviews with us. Now, a lot of these guys are extremely generous, not only with their time, but their recipes and their beer. And these are some of the most wonderful people out there. And I love these guys. I mean, somebody like Mitch Steele at Stone. Has that guy, could he be any more helpful? I don't think so.
Or nice
yeah. Or generous. Just a wonderful, friendly person, you know, everybody would love this guy, and you know, so helpful with his time.
You might think he might be a little arrogant, you know, after all that arrogant bastard, but no.
He is wonderful, and there's a bunch of guys like that. But every once in a while, you know, people don't bother to respond, or you know,
secrets.
You know, there's a few of them out there. Like, well, it's a secret. I can't tell you anything about our beers because they're perfect. And if I told you anything about it, everyone else would start making our beers. And
yeah,
it's like, yeah, sure they would.
That's what they'd want to be. Have a duplicate of somebody else's.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Well,
I mean, you know,
that should be like a T-shirt.
The clone thing is really just a fan trying to love your product even more, I think.
For sure.
But, you know, the thing being, if you can send us these requests, you're going to want to go and talk to those breweries. You know, maybe CC them on the request and say, hey, you know, I love this beer. You know, I tell them, hey, your fans, you know, I got 50 requests for this beer.
And, you know, well, you know, several of the beers that I've done for this show that I wouldn't have normally, you know, bought, I'm now buying.
Right.
Because I like the beer.
Yeah,
got
exactly.
To try it. I was forced into it.
You got so much brewing to do anyways. You're not going to be...
Yeah, you might have to brew something good.
Right. Well, and you're going to be buying these beers because you got other beers you got to brew.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way homebrewers are. There's no way that you're going to, you know, put the guy out of business by homebrewing the beer. You move on to some other beer, and then you start, you know, buying his beer at retail.
Right, exactly. But
and also the challenge. I mean, the whole idea of the technique and the challenge. Uh-huh, I mean, that's what intrigued me about this beer particularly.
Right.
That challenge.
You know, so if you want us to be able to do this, you got to go to the brewers, you know, go to them face to face if you get a chance and say, hey, you know, I want you guys to, you know, get on the Brewing Network.
Yeah.
You know, get out there. Say, Brewing Network. Get on the Brewing Network. How come you're not on the Brewing Network?
Get your beer out there.
And I don't care what show it is, but, you know, go out there and hassle them a little bit. Well, don't hassle them, but, you know, request nicely. You know, show your face, smile, and say, you know, I want you on the Brewing Network. Well, we don't have the 120 interview, but I did interview Andy Tvikram back some years ago. Very kindly spent time helping me out with a recipe for a Zymergy article that I did on making big beers. And Sean, you've talked to Andy as well.
I did. It was kind of fun because I had a couple questions and wanted to kind of pick his brain a little bit more, and he was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I believe he's no longer the brewmaster there.
I don't know exactly.
Back in the day, he was, and he was extremely helpful. And some of the things he told me, he said that, you know, when you're making these, you know, it's all about, you know, you can't just, you know, take whatever recipe and double it and make a big beer. And I think there was a lot of interest recently on the forums of, well, can I take a big beer and make a small beer out of it? You know, a session beer out of it. You can't just cut the ingredients in half and then brew it, and it's going to make a good, you know, lower gravity session beer. Same thing, you can't just take, you know, a recipe and double it and triple it and all of a sudden come out with a great...
Imperial,
you know,
Kolsch.
Yeah, high gravity beer. I mean, it just doesn't quite work out that way. Well, Kolsch might. I mean, that's a pretty simple recipe. Some of these others... You know,
but it's still going to taste kind of a little bit differently, you know, with the strength and everything else. It's really going to, you know.
Right. It'll no longer be Kolsch. You're going to have to make some adjustments to really make it work out. But, you know, they shared with us the recipe, and I'm sure all you guys are very fond of Dogfish. You all know where Dogfish is at, right? And one of the things that Andy told me, said when they're selecting bittering hops for their big beers, they want to use all lower cohumulone hop varieties for a smoother bitterness. They believe that. And for the Dogfish 120, they were using a mix of Simcoe, Amarillo, and Warrior, is what he told me. So, essentially, Andy gave me this recipe. And for a 6-gallon batch, which is 6 gallons at the end of the boil, you're going to have 5.5 gallons go from the kettle to the fermenter. And then you're going to ferment that 5.5 gallons. You're going to end up with 5 gallons of clean beer in your keg or in your bottles. So that's why we do 6 gallons on all the recipes for all the last up to 4 years of show. Most have used the same measures, 70% efficiency, Rager formula for hops, and 50% evaporation rate, things like that. All right, so this is 59.4% or 9.2 kilograms of Pilsner malt, Pilsner malt, and then 1.9% or 0.3 kilograms or 300 grams of an amber malt, 35 Love British amber malt, and then 38.7%, 6 kilograms of simple table sugar. And that gets added in at another time. And in imperial measure, I got 20.28 pounds of Pilsner, 0.66 pounds of amber malt, and 13.23 pounds of cane sugar. You see how it works out so much more nicely in kilograms and grams. On the hops, we've got during the boil, 1.5 ounces or 42 grams of Amarillo pellet hops, around 10% alpha acid, doing this continuous hopping method. And then we've got 1.5 ounces or 42 grams of Simcoe pellet hops, 13% alpha acid, also continuous hopping. And then 1.5 ounces, 42 grams of Warrior pellet hops, 60% alpha acid, doing this continuous hopping. And what they essentially do is, Sean will go over this a little bit more in the actual brewing techniques, but they mix the hops in a container, and they're adding about 3 grams of the mixture every 3 minutes over the course of 120 minutes. And so you'd mix that up into a big bunch, and then maybe figure out, get yourself a little scoop that's about 3 grams, and take a scoop and toss in every 3 minutes. You want to do this exactly like Dogfish Head does. And then they have about 3 ounces, 1 ounce each, or 28 grams each, of Amarillo, Simcoe, and Warrior pellets that are used in the daily dry hopping. And they, again, mix it up in a container, and then you're going to take about 6 grams of that, and you're going to put it in the fermenter every day. And then also, you're going to be adding some sugar as well. So they do a single infusion mash, 149 degrees Fahrenheit, 65 degrees C. And that's your base malt, and you'll do just the grains that way. All the sugar is added for the during the fermentation. So you start the fermentation. You're going to use a California ale yeast or a Y-Yeast 1056. Or a White Labs WLP-001. Or you can use and that'll be for the initial fermentation. And the following fermentation, they've got a White Labs WLP-099 super high gravity ale, and you can use that for the remainder. So Andy said a couple of things. The key to making a copy of our 120-minute IPA is to add the hop pellets continuously throughout the 2-hour boil. You'll be adding more hops than you think is prudent. That's got nothing to do with homebrewers or the Brewing Network. Start the main fermentation with the first ale yeast at 72 degrees Fahrenheit, 22 degrees C. 2 or 3 days later, prepare a 2-quart starter for the high-gravity ale yeast. After the main batch is fermented for several days, or when about 1/2 of the primary fermentation is done, combine the high-gravity ale yeast starter into the main batch. Feed the fermenter twice daily with dextrose that has been liquefied with the fermenting beer. So you pull some of the beer out, you mix up some of the sugar, and 35 to 40% of the overall fermentables are going to come from that dextrose. You feed the sugar for approximately 7 to 14 days, and length of time and the amount of alcohol depends on you know, that overall problem, which is which. And we have come up with a consensus here, I think. Tasty, what did you think? Is it cloned or not cloned?
Well, I'm, you know, of the belief that it's not cloned, mainly for the reasons that you'll point out as well, I'm sure, is that a lot of residual sugar left over in Sean's beer. I can definitely, you know, sense that the Dogfish 120 is in there. Mm-hmm. It's just mm-hmm. being a little bit covered up by the sweetness that's left over in the beer. The Dogfish, you know, to me it's sort of more in the genre of a triple IPA, whereas the, you know, Sean's beer is a little bit more like possibly like a barley wine, kind of a flavor to it, kind of a cherry, you know, kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're going with not cloned.
Yeah.
All right, Justin.
I don't know which is which, although I would guess similar to Tasty, my checkmark glass, which is real sweet. These have been sitting for a little while, my samples, mm-hmm. too. No head left on that. And I would call it a little barley winey because of that sweetness. A lot of really a lot of residual sugar left in my glass with the checkmark on it. I'm going to call that, I think that's Paxton's. And yeah, the characteristics are really similar. I can see that it was, yeah, I don't know if it's a fermentation thing that happened or what. I can see that the recipe's close, but I think it's not cloned either.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's,
well,
but it's close.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the profile, I don't know how to explain that right, but the profile of the two beers is very, very similar.
Right.
The flavors that are coming out, but just one of them is, it's coming from a lot more sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, the characteristics of the two are dead on identical. I mean, those base characteristics are the same. The things that are different for me is the Dogfish is a little more carbonated, which helps dry it out a little bit as well. And then the clone has a little bit more unfermented sugar in it. And the interesting thing to me is the clone is, I would say, you know, we're talking about how the difference between like Utopias and Dogfish 120, and I would put the clone, you know, in between Dogfish 120 and Utopias.
Hmm.
It's kind of like right in there, you know, and it, you know, but you know, right in between those two. So it adds some of that character that Utopias has.
Yeah, that's a really good observation.
But you know, otherwise, you know, very close. Unfortunately, on this show, I got to call it not cloned because, you know, we're sticklers for it. It's got to be where you're confused as to which one's which. You know, it's got to be that close. And usually we are confused, but...
you know, if you really want to be sure about your Utopias observation, I might have a bottle kicking around here.
Right.
You can really taste it next to it.
Compared.
Yeah, it's just not close enough, is it?
Right. Well, but again, you know, I'm not sure I would change the recipe at all. I think the recipe is spot on.
It's technique. And, I mean, learned actually something pretty interesting from this beer.
It's a very tricky beer to make and have it turn out the same.
It's an attenuation challenge,
Dogfish.
For sure.
Right.
That's definitely what I meant about how the profile is.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, if you look at it side by side, it's almost identical.
The color's the same. The clarity. Aroma. Clarity's the same. It has that same...
aroma in the nose.
Aroma, yeah.
It is a little sweet, though, I will say
that. And the interesting thing is, flavor-wise, the hops disappear in yours, but they're
because
there...
Because of the sweetness, I think.
Right, but they're there in the aroma.
Yeah.
And that shows that the hops are there, it's just a bit too much sweetness is kind of covering it up, I think.
Yeah.
So what would you say, Sean? You say it's cloned, or...?
I say it's really close.
Really close?
I mean, I agree it is a little sweeter. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't carbonate mine at all, mm-hmm. so that probably would change with the carbonic acid a little bit. When I initially brewed this, I actually did keg some up and force carbonate because that's really all you can do.
Right.
I actually didn't like it as much, and actually mm-hmm. I blood off the CO2 and then just bottled it in little punts, little 6 ounce bottles.
Yeah, if people are going to carbonate this, carbonate it.
It's tricky.
Gently.
Yeah,
I mean, delicately. I mean, you're looking for
and
maybe...
And even delicately, it actually really radically changed the flavor profile.
Like a volume and a half, maybe?
If that.
Yeah. That's about, I think, what Dogfish is doing. And that, to me, seems like, you know, the best of both worlds. But, you know, you got to get it to dry out, too.
That,
and
definitely.
I think that helps because... you know, that's a major part of it. So, all right, so we've got the recipe. Now, the tricky part is all really in the fermentation, right? I mean, the standard beer itself is not that tough.
Well, it is and it isn't, because if you're starting to think about using that much sugar in any beer, I think it was a real interesting analysis of also how clean your system is, as well as technique. Because the technique in brewing this beer is very different than any other beer I've ever brewed. And that was kind of half the challenge, at least for me.
I will also say this. When I had that early bottle of Dogfish 120, it wasn't as attenuated as today's sample.
Oh, it's very different, yeah.
Right.
When it first came out.
It was sweeter and a little more syrupy.
Yeah.
So, if we were comparing that early bottle to yours, then I'd say it would be even one step closer. So, still not cloned, but it just means you have to brew it again.
Damn it. Well, it was a real fun beer to brew, and I do encourage a lot of people to brew it. And I really enjoyed the whole process because it's not your standard brewing. I mean, you really have to plan ahead and make sure you're around, and it's like a baby. I mean, you got to change it every day.
So this is every day, twice a day, right?
Yeah, so basically what I did is when I brewed it, I did it a little bit different than the recipe in that I did a 95-degree dough in, a 122 rest, a 135, a 144, and then a 148.
Mm-hmm. And why did you do that?
Well, I mean, even though it's basically, you know, all Pilsner malt that supposedly is all converted, I really wanted to make sure that I got the best attenuation as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to really make sure you got as much of the grain as you possibly could, because, you know, to think about adding that high percentage of sugar and thinking about what that's going to do to the overall flavor, I wanted to get as much as I possibly could from the grains.
Mm-hmm.
And when I actually brewed mine, I actually doubled the recipe because I looked at a 5-gallon batch of this and it's like, okay, but if I do this, I really want to age this. I knew that I wanted to have some of this around for a very long period of time. So,
well, now you're going to do another batch, so you'll...
I know. So now I'll have even extra. So because I actually still have a lot of this around. So because actually what we're drinking today is actually brewed in January of 06.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have some age on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun, too, because to really put your thought, you know, around the technique and what to do to actually create this beer, you know, to really use that kind of a mash schedule that you could really extract as much as you possibly can from the grains without getting any astringency or anything else like that.
Right.
And to get the gravity and just to really nail it. You know, the fact, too, that, you know, I knew it was going to be an all-day event. So,
Well, we always like to nail it.
So that was the thing. So
yes, we do.
When at it least works. In our dreams,
right?
Or on the old whatever. You have some notes here, which I've been reading, Sean. You didn't mention oxygenation. Obviously, you did. Did you do oxygenation like the second day, or the second day of the ferment?
Oh
or?
No, actually, I did it. So basically. I'll answer your question in 1 second.
Go ahead.
So, first I brewed it, you know, and basically, one of the funny things that I found about brewing this beer is that proper preparation prevents poor performance, or otherwise known as the 5 P's, really makes a big difference because you will have a very hard time peeing as you're brewing this beer. it's like every 3 minutes you have to be a timer going off for two
hours.
It's so funny because it's like all the time
you
usually have to clean all the time that you
have
to do all these other things. You don't have that. Maybe it's just the chef and me, but
you need a buddy.
Actually, I had two buddies there, but even then it was
your sous brewer.
It was a lot of extra prep actually before you even brew this beer because to take the hops, mix them all up together and then
figure out what 3-gram or 6-gram additions are.
So basically, you know, I put it into 40 Dixie cups. So that's every 3 minutes I was putting it in since I didn't have a special device or what was it? It was a hot. A hockey machine that they were using originally.
It's one of the early ones they used. Yeah. One of those old football games where it vibrates and the little players travel around.
They
put that on there and it all vibrated the hops in. But then the steam from the kettle kind of killed it. So
since modified
Sir Hops-a-Lot or whatever they called it. Yeah.
So since I didn't have a Sir Hops-a-Lot, I looked at it as a
slave labor.
Yeah, exactly. So every 2 minutes was a little bit much, but I felt every 3 minutes would be fine, mm-hmm. especially, 40 hop additions in any beer, I think that's going to, versus 60 versus 80, it's like, okay, right. I'm pretty happy with 40. So what I did, basically, once it came up to boil, started a timer for 120 minutes, and then I had one going every 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and it's hard to get a lot done. And so, you don't add any of the sugar to the boil at all. Basically, every 3 minutes you're popping that in. Once that was done, turned off the heat, chilled it down with my plate chiller into my conical. And at that point, once I'd collected all the wort, I took off about 2 quarts of the wort and oxygenated that separately. And that's actually what I did as the starter for the high gravity yeast. Mm-hmm. And so that way I'm not mixing anything. I'm not adding anything different. Mm-hmm. Kept it really clean that way. Mm-hmm. And then at that point I oxygenated it, very heavy, a lot heavier than I normally would have. So about
30 longer,
what was that second. Starting gravity of the grain?
I want to say it was, actually that I didn't itself? Write down. It was around 1.14, mm-hmm. somewhere mm-hmm. in there. Mm-hmm. It was definitely like a barley wine-esque at that point.
Right.
I basically oxygenated it twice a day for the first 5 days.
5 days, okay.
Wow. So to really give it as much as possible. And actually, I used extra yeast nutrients as well, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to really make sure they had enough zinc and everything mm-hmm. else to really make sure that yeast was really healthy. Mm-hmm. And actually, I did a starter where I took just a vial, but the 1056, and actually I bumped that up for about 4 days. So, I mean, I had mm-hmm. a big slurry. Mm-hmm. Pitched that in once the beer was chilled, and then I had Ziploc bags where basically I put 12 ounces of sugar in each one, which mm-hmm. equals 22 pounds of dextrose. And so this is also where it's interesting, too, is because if you were to use sugar versus mm-hmm. dextrose, that was a whole issue as well, because mm-hmm. 22 pounds of dextrose is not cheap.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get into Sean's white powder and baggies. Back after this.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Network.
Now back to Can You Brew It?
All right, we're back. We're talking Dogfish 120 and our clone master. Pardon me, today is Sean Paxton here in the studio with Tasty McDowell and myself. And we're talking about your powder in your little dime bags.
It felt like that, actually. I felt like a dealer.
And you're feeding the addiction of the ferment.
Definitely.
All right, so you've fermented out most of the way your initial...
About five days
in, which is going to take you down from your starting 1.10 whatever gravity to, you're probably in the 30s, 40s at this point.
Kept around 30. That was kind of my goal. Right.
And now what you're going to add is this super high gravity yeast from White Labs, the O99.
Or the Eau de Vie from White Yeast. Yeah.
Okay. And then you would add that in, a big active starter that's, and it's important. You can't just dump in the yeast. You can't even dump in dry yeast.
No.
If you dump in an inactive yeast into a beer that has a certain percentage of alcohol and all the simple sugars gone, the yeast is just going to sink to the bottom. It's not going to get started. You have to have it started and fermenting and ready to go. It's got to be high croissant. You add that in, and you've got a good chance it'll continue on. So you've added that, and then do you immediately add some sugar?
Well,
or
back up just a little bit, because what's interesting, too, is that, you know, to use the 1056 to start, you're actually going to get some flavor off that 1056.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just use the eau de vie yeast or the high-gravity yeast, mm-hmm. you're not going to get as much flavor. And so that's actually a thing that I was talking to Andy about.
That's where your beer flavor comes in.
A big flavor. Mm-hmm. And because if you just do straight eau de vie, I mean, that yeast is really made for more distilling
mm-hmm.
than drinking. So mm-hmm. that's where I thought it was really interesting, too. And that's a piece that I think a lot of people might miss in that, you know, mm-hmm. oh, I just add this right in. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually allowing the beer to actually start to ferment like normal before you start adding this extra yeast that is going to just dominate the 1056, mm-hmm. even though that's mm-hmm. a pretty high alcohol resistant yeast. But that's the thing, too. I mean, to think about a beer that's in the 20% range versus like the 12 to 14%, you know, because you don't really see a lot of other beers out there above 14%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about Sammy Claus, you know, I mean, that wasn't that high anywhere near. And then you start looking at what, you know, they're doing with Utopias now at 26%. I mean, you got to have some pretty resilient yeast. And so mm-hmm. that's where
and everything,
and that's where like everything that you're doing is really making sure that the yeast are as happy as possible. So that's why you're oxygenating for the first 5 days to make sure that, you know, their cell walls are really healthy and all that yeast nutrients that you're adding in.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically I had put 28 dime bags, if you will, just lined them all up and had all that all pre-worked out mm-hmm. because basically first thing in the morning.
And how much in each bag?
12 ounces.
12 ounces.
And I used a conical, and this is where I think a conical over a carboy would mm-hmm. be really essential. I mm-hmm. think this would be really hard to keep it as sanitary. Mm-hmm. So basically what I did is I had a gallon pitcher, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's no scratches, no nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I had it sitting in a 5 gallon right. bucket of star sand.
I see. Because you were able to just run some right beer off out off the bottom port.
And I didn't use a side port. I actually used the bottom port because I wanted
to stir
yeast.
Some yeast.
Exactly.
Yeah, get it back in suspension.
As much viability right. as possible.
Right, right. Stirring the yeast up in suspension really helps. With attenuation. That's one of the things about the design of the conical with the circulation
cone,
patterns
yeah.
that you set up that help things attenuate a little bit more from energy. It has a big effect on this.
Definitely.
But I can see what you're saying. If you were doing this from a carboy, you would have
You'd
to...
be pouring it? I mean, like...
Pouring it or getting a, you know, you... constantly be sticking your tubing into your
wine
beer.
Thief, yeah.
Yeah. yeah, I mean twice a day for 14 days.
Right.
I mean,
and if you stick it in that much,
times,
and if you don't,
you're
have
adding
your,
a whole another layer.
If your
of
tube
like,
is not perfectly
whoops.
Sanitary,
gets raw.
You're gonna get some. You're gonna catch a social disease for
you're
sure.
You're gonna yeah. infect that beer. Yeah. yeah.
And right. so basically, I had a stainless steel whisk, and
I'll tell you, for a beer like this, that's you know, there's plenty of residual sugar. And, you know, for a couple of years, there's not one hint of any off contamination or anything in that beer. So, you know, that's a testament to how clean you were.
It was, I mean, from a financial standpoint, I mean, this isn't a cheap beer to make.
Right,
and
right.
to do, you know, about 11 gallons is, mm-hmm. I think, what I ended up with after everything. So, mm-hmm. and it was a trip, too, because you see how much yeast is on the bottom of this thing, and it mm-hmm. was pretty surreal.
Well, how much is a 12-ounce bottle of Dogfish 120?
About $8.50 to $9.
About $8.50 to $9, and you got 10 gallons.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure it was expensive, but... Yeah.
Well worth the time.
Yeah,
I highly recommend the... I mean, it was a great experience. And actually, mm-hmm. it opened my mind to a lot of other ideas. I mean, just to understand this technique. And so, I mean, it's really, you know, what Andy talks about, not only in your article, but also my interactions with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and basically, you know, having everything sanitary, pouring it out the bottom. And what was a real trip was that when you poured that slurry off the bottom... I would take about 2 quarts mm-hmm. out of the gallon mm-hmm. Pitcher and then add in the sugar.
And that was enough to dissolve 12 ounces of sugar?
Pretty much. And I mean, and this is where dextrose is really critical because if you used regular white table sugar, which mm-hmm. you can get a 25-pound bag at Costco for like $8, mm-hmm. which would have been very economical, mm-hmm. I don't know how you would have actually dissolved the sugar.
I think you'd have to make a syrup.
Well, and that's the thing, but
just a few ounces of water and make a thick syrup of it.
But then, if you think about that, even if you did that, you're mm-hmm. still diluting mm-hmm. the whole process.
Yeah. I'm sure it would knock it down a little bit, but you know, if you're desperate,
I mean, I'm just saying. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
And this
sure.
is where I did a lot of thinking uh-huh. about right. The right ingredient to the right procedure, mm-hmm. that whole mm-hmm. piece, mm-hmm. and so that way I didn't have to worry about heating something up because
right,
even
right.
having, I mean, if you were to make a simple syrup, if you will, mm-hmm. with the dextrose and water, and having right. that around because adding it twice a day to do that process twice a day, mm-hmm. it's kind of tedious.
What about confectioner's sugar?
I don't think so because there's actually cornstarch.
Well, that's right. That's how they get it so powdery.
Yep.
Oh, okay, there you go.
So, and that's where, I mean, I did look a lot at different sugars and why and what's like, you know, mm-hmm. they have the caster sugar, which is the super fine sugar.
Right, right.
And they use that a lot in bartending.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't dissolve as well when you start to look at that amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the flavor of the dextrose, which is corn versus cane, actually, I think, attributes to the actual flavor profile of the beer.
Hmm. Well, I wonder if you couldn't also...
I mean, think about it. 22 pounds of sugar into, you know, 33 pounds of malt. That's a pretty high percentage.
Yeah, I think it all ends up as alcohol, and there's very little left over. I wonder if you couldn't trickle in a bit of sugar undissolved into the beer every so often. The advantage being, you take some granular sugar, and if you're going to do this in a carboy, rather than racking some beer out of it,
just topping it off.
If time is cheaper for you, then you know, if you got lots of time and not lots of money, then you take that and just add you know, a couple of tablespoons to the beer every, you know, maybe 10 times a day. You know, spread it out, and the sugar granules act as nucleation sites. You'll get some foaming. You'll get that. You'll drive off that CO2, which will help a lot with attenuation. If you can get rid of CO2, attenuation goes up. Now esters go up as well, but.
Well, that's an interesting point, and the one thing I was really worried about, because I did think about that idea, was, one, to be around for 2 weeks. Or,
two weeks.
I mean,
2 weeks, all day, 2 weeks, yeah.
And doing this, that whole thing.
Well,
and then
know,
the other thing.
When you're jobless, like, or retired like me, and jobless like Justin or Chad. Or,
I need a stretch.
And if you work in your PJs like Tasty.
I could do this easily.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's walking back and forth
PJs.
To go to the...
You're being nice to him.
Go to the urinal.
I wear, you know.
He goes to the urinal every 20 minutes anyway.
I wear nutters. I wear nutters.
You can just put the fermenter right next to the urinal, and while you're peeing, you can just a couple of tablespoons of sugar. Huh?
Sure, every time I go.
There you go.
Nice.
I mean, I didn't do a test with a whole carboy, but I did test with a glass of water and sprinkle in some sugar, and I did find that it was not dissolving at the bottom.
It'll settle, yeah.
And that was my concern, too, is that would it get lost in the yeast as it would settle, and then you just lose that sugar. And
I think that's an excellent point, and what you'd need to make sure of is, because if you were to settle a whole bunch of sugar on top of the yeast cake at the bottom and make it and get a thick viscous layer there, the yeast won't ferment that. If it gets to too high an osmotic gravity, the yeast cannot ferment it. So if you were to do this, I would say swirl the carboy,
multiple
dump
times.
The yeast in, or the sugar in, and give it a swirl, you know, and let it kind of stir up, because and monitor that, like Andy was saying. You got to monitor what's going on, because if the yeast have stopped fermenting the sugar, and just adding more sugar is not going to do it.
No.
You're just going to make your beer sweeter, so you need to be careful.
And this is where it was interesting, too, for me, is that, so I would take that pitcher and then pour it back in the open port on the top of the conical. And when I sealed it back up, whatever air was in the airlock or whatever water was in the airlock, it would completely blow everything out. I mean, it was so active. It was like, thank you, we are having a party.
Well,
and it was just amazing.
You're letting some carbonation out.
Yeah, you're driving a lot of CO2 off as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing just that whole process, because you're feeding all this extra sugar that's instant. I mean,
then it stirs up the yeast.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
It's that CO2 lifting.
It's at the end, because in the beginning, you kind of see the beer actually change from like day 1 to day 14, and that you actually see the beer go from not a lot of yeast to more and more yeast, and then you start to really see all the different processes of fermentation. And then at the end, I mean, you're pouring out just almost like sludge. And so you you'll actually start using about 3 quarts versus 2 quarts to get this process going. And this is where actually I would actually change something in the recipe with that. Instead of having all the dime bags at 12 ounces, I would actually do some at 6 and 4. And so as you get further into the process, because you'll kind of start to see smaller amount. And that's where I think I made the mistake. And that's why it's a little sweet.
That's why it's sweet. Yep.
Because at a certain point, you can't keep adding oxygen. I mean, you're going to oxygenate your beer.
Right.
You
oxygenate.
And I don't want it to be like cardboard, So, and then the other thing with it is that you have a little bit more control that way. Because it's a trip. Because at the very end, that last addition, you see it. I mean, the yeast is done. Like, they just completely drop out.
Like, nothing happens.
Yeah.
You have the sugar, and you're like,
and I mean, seriously, this was like maybe one bag too many, because you're looking at the gravity, and I mean, if you add up all the sugar and all the grain that I used, your OG is like 1,200.
Right.
So,
so that's the thing is, I think... what do we have here is the, you start out with like a 1092 without the sugar, and then with the sugar, you're doing 1194. So 1.194, so 1200 is probably about exactly what
you're
doing.
So, how do you figure out the alcohol content of this beer, because that was the other thing too, because it's like, well, you started with this and then you're adding this is what was left over. So, so it was a lot of fun to really think about this whole process, because you could actually do this with a lot of different things. So,
Well, I got a question for you here, and I'm sure Mike has a bunch of questions as well. Sorry, I've been hogging all your time here, but I think
you can hog all you want. Braise him, braise him.
Why? Thank you. One question for you, you know, and I don't think I could have you on a show without asking. What kind of foods would you pair with the Dogfish 120? What would you do with it food-wise?
I think anything with apricots for like a dessert or peaches, I think would be really interesting. Mm. I get a lot of cognac flavors.
In your clone. Yeah, very much.
And that's what I really actually enjoy about it.
I actually kind of like cognac, yeah. So
yeah, and I mean, without being, you know, 40%, it's 20%.
Right.
So, and that's where I think anything vanilla, I think, would be fun with it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the hop, especially being the Simcoe, the Warrior doesn't have, you know, a huge flavor profile in comparison to the Simcoe and the Amarillo. Those are the real dominant. And those, I think the Amarillo, to me, has a lot of dried apricot flavors. So I really think, you know, anything like a pudding or a creme brulee or accentuate that a little bit more. I think would be really nice.
You know, and this may seem criminal, but I think if you added some of your clone to a nice tea...
Oh, totally.
Good quality tea. And
that'd be really good.
You know, it would sweeten up the tea, but you'd have those alcohols and those aromas. And
bounce
you'd have
out the
hop.
Tannins,
and
yeah.
Really help your cold.
That'd be
good
really
for
nice.
A hot
I mean, that'd be very nice, you know.
Your buttered rum.
Nice cold evening. That'd be quite good.
Especially this time of year, actually.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I did that was too. A little different. Hey, you never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you gave me a little bottle. You also gave me a bottle of Blind Pig, and I drank both of those, not in the same day. But I drink both.
Which wouldn't be beyond you. It's just you didn't ever get around to it. That's all.
But I did keep the fermentation temperature around between 66 and 70 because with it, each addition, you'd actually really feel the conical actually get warm. It was a real trip just to see the yeast and how much heat they would actually really put off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder, you know, I think if maybe if you didn't do 10 additions a day, but if you took the two additions and broke them up into maybe four additions, you know, the more additions you broke it up into, I think the easier it would be for the yeast. You know, kind
and
of that
was,
continuous rather than a boom, bust, boom, bust, boom, bust.
But see, what's also hard, too, is that, again, you're looking at the viability of the yeast. And so, you know, doing it three times, four times a day probably would be better if you can pull that off. I didn't really have that option. I really did it every 12 hours was my addition.
Right.
And then really, I mean, it's a trip. I mean, you just think about feeding something that long. I was really worried after that 2-week period, if it did take 3 weeks instead, if I did less over a longer period of time, I was really worried about attenuation.
Well, you know, you have a job and things like that, but, you know, if you get somebody like Push, you know, I'm sure what he'd do is pull his kids out of school and have them stand next to the carboy and make additions
I'm
all
sure
day long.
I'm sure Mrs. Bush would be okay with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's very supportive. She's
for love
woman.
Of beer.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, the you mentioned the temperature a little bit. You said it kept between, 60-something and 70?
66 and 70.
So you cooled in, like when your initial fermentation temperature was...
I didn't want it too warm because I didn't want to get too many esters. So I felt like, too, just like with the high alcohol yeast, you know, what flavor profile that was going to bring to the party.
You've got a nice balance. You know, it's. I think your ester profile is the same as the Dogfish. Yeah.
And that was really the goal, you know. And so to really think about that because, you know, I'm even... 1056, you know, it can go up to, 74, 75?
Right.
You do get a little bit more
pineapple
fruitiness, you know, yeah.
And here's the thing. You know, when we're doing these clone brews, the thing that Tasty and I are finding is, you know, the brewer's giving us their actual fermentation temperature, but you have to kind of envision what kind of fermenter they're doing and how deep these fermenters are. Because if you're using a 30-foot-tall fermenter...
Thousands of gallons.
It suppresses ester production with all that CO2, with the higher partial pressure of CO2 in solution. It really does, and especially the bottom where the yeast is on the cone, you're getting a lot less esters at those higher temperatures. So you... When you're doing your homebrew version, you actually, you know, when somebody tells you like Stone or Dogfish tells you 72 degrees, you're thinking 68? Yeah, that's probably about right. They're not lying to you. You know, they're not trying to make
very
something
different.
Up. It's different equipment. You need to make some adjustments.
And
on
you think about just the volume of what they're doing versus what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, radically different.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you... do a secondary? I mean, did you drop the 001 when it was done?
Nope. I kept it right in.
So you kept the whole yeast cake there?
Well, and my thought process on that one was, is that, okay, so there is potentially an issue with autolysis. Right. So, but at the same time, too, by taking that yeast out and adding in the new, there would be a lag time.
Right.
And then also trying to think about, God, this is going to be just a friggin' huge beer. It needs every help that it can possibly
and
get.
And I don't taste anything.
Well, that's what I see here.
Any off.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Yeah, I see this as a real big fermentation challenge. I
mean, oh, it's huge.
Created this almost unfermentable mountain that you have to climb.
I mean, after I read the article from Jamil and Zymergy, you know, great magazine, but yet at the same time, I'm like, wow, this really opens up a lot of questions because this is not your standard brewing, and nobody talks about how to brew like this. And so that's where I emailed Andy, and it was really interesting, too, because this is where, again, to really think about everything that you're doing through the whole brewing process and why and what effect that little tiny thing, but you do it 28 times, you could screw your beer up real easy because there's that much more opportunities for, you know, bread or anything else that might be around your brewery, you know. So
well, I think you got really close.
Well, thank you. I mean, no, it is a little sweeter, and that's where, at the very end, I mean, it's amazing how easy it is to overshoot
One extra pack.
That's all it was.
Right.
Well, you know, you think the yeast, when you think about the yeast you're doing late in this ferment, I mean, they're just trying to strike a balance between what they can eat, and if you give it too much sugar, they're going to want to go into reproductive mode, right? Because they see more sugar than they can consume, they're going to want to mate. That means they're going to stop eating. So you have to, is that right? Can't they?
Well,
but actually, are they really eating?
I mean, you want to keep
are they still reproducing at that level at 18 to 20%? I mean, that's where, I don't know what paper to read to find out that information.
You know, if you get more oxygen, then yes.
But then I would screw myself.
Right.
Or use nutrients. I mean. Right.
But if you overfeed them, aren't they going to go into some state that you don't want them to be in?
No. You know, that's the
interesting thing.
They'll
just take longer
to
eat that sugar.
You know, I was just talking with Whitey about this very thing. And
well, he would say it depends.
Right, because he's right. You know, give me all. If you gave him all the parameters, he would give you the exact answer. But if you give him, like, you know,
3/4 of
the ballpark,
two of the parameters of the 100, he's going to be like, well, you know, it depends on the other 98. What he's not saying is depends on the other 98. He says, well, you know, I think the yeast, there's that whole thing with the crab tree effect and all that. And he was saying, you know, it never really occurs. So, you know, the yeast are always fermenting no matter what.
Cool.
So even when they're, you know, reproducing, they're fermenting. So it's just realistically in the beers we give it now, this is a kind of an odd case. So maybe not. I don't know. That's a good question, though. But I think... you know, what you're getting at, Mike, it sounded like you're getting at, tell me if not, is that, you know, being very careful in metering out the sugar a little slower.
The thought of having reduced size packets at the end would be, would kind of force you into that mode, like give them a break when they're their weakest or at the end of their cycle.
And just to slow it down, because, I mean, this is where
to make
it's
sure
also,
that you don't overfeed them.
And that's really, that's the goal. And that's where, too, I learned from that experience, and I'm sharing that with all you guys out there.
So what was your measure of fermentation activity? Did you have a bubbler? Is that what you were watching, the bubble activity?
Yeah. But even it was a trip, because the day before when I poured in the mixed slurry, if you will, I mean, it went still apeshit. And I mean, it really went from one packet to like, boom, like it just went tunk. I mean, within 4 hours, it had stopped. It was that fast. And so to go from such a vigorous, I've never had any fermentation ever like this. It was so radical to go from that all the way to this after 14 days, because I've never actually seen a beer ferment like that for 14 days. But I mean, think about how much sugar you're adding in. I mean, it's
had a lot of work to do.
And so that's where it's completely different than anything I've ever brewed. Half the fun of it, too.
Well, you know, I treat a lot of my ferments that way. I'll intentionally mash really high to make it less fermentable. Then I'll attack the ferment aggressively like that. I'll do lots of oxygenation, a lot of yeast nutrients. do a rise in temperature in the last 50% of the ferment, stuff like that.
Just
to, Mike, you do that in order to get a drier beer without a thin beer.
Without a thin beer.
Yeah, without
right.
the body.
So you can have
the Janus Brown Ale's like that.
Yeah, you can have a finishing gravity that's 10-12, 10-16, 10-20, but
beer.
It's dry.
Right.
So the flavor is dry, but you've got a nice rich beer. I
and
love
body.
That combination. Yeah. It's one of the reasons I think I love all the beers you give me, Mike, is
oh,
because
sure.
you
and that is an art to do it that way.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but I like that challenge. It's fun, and I think what you've got is a fermentation challenge here. So that's it.
And that's sort of too, because also trying to think about how much residual sweetness will the sugar add as far as body? And that's where I was like, So that's why I used the meshing schedule that I did,
sure.
because I basically wanted to treat it like a saison. I wanted it as dry as I possibly get it. So cause I knew that that would be the biggest issue, was because once that yeast stopped, it stops. Mm-hmm. So
you mentioned that you did draw the wort that you're doing your mixing with off the bottom port. Did you ever roust the yeast through the bottom port, like push CO2 in there and roust everything back up?
That I never did.
Something that I've done on a lot of ferments that I thought weren't progressing the way I wanted.
Pouring it out and adding it back in, I felt that was kind of already doing that process, because also that's where I struggled a little bit, because, I do have a stainless steel carbonation stone on a stainless steel rod that I could put in there very safely and not have to worry about, because I would always have the oxygen on full bore, so it was already coming out the pores and not going back in at the end, and really making sure that I kept that as clean as possible and put that in the star sand
so
as well.
So keep your rod clean and stick it in there.
Exactly.
While it's flowing and,
make sure that happens. But then when if you stop and think about it, if I'm pouring off just the contact with the air, as it's coming out the bottom port, and then using the whisk to whisk it in, I am whisking in some percentage of air.
Ambient. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I was like, okay, I don't really want to do too much else. And I didn't want to add
any
more
CO2. You've got enough fermentation
CO2.
Going to absorb that CO2.
Yeah.
And it probably could use it,
actually. I think it did. Right. So, it definitely benefited.
Yeah.
So. But a lot of fun to brew.
All right.
Oh, and actually, too, the one thing that I'm forgetting to say is that so also...
I'm sexy?
No. Okay, sexy. That's a given. But every day for 4 weeks, I dry hopped it. So just kind of keep adding
hopped
some...
It. Yeah.
Or so, just keep adding some pellets every day. And
every
that was
day?
Day? Every day for 4 weeks.
How many pellets every day?
6 grams.
6 grams.
A day.
Every
Were you
day.
Not listening to the recipe?
So I had a baggie for
Did you have
those
to ask
as well.
That?
No, the answer is you weren't listening.
He wasn't even in the room, was he?
So basically the first 2 weeks...
He was shaking hands or something, I don't know.
The first 2 weeks, you're on it twice a day, and then the 2 weeks after that, you're still on it once a day. Mm-hmm. So you really need to be around for 4 weeks as this beer's doing its thing. Mm-hmm. You can't just walk
Can't go on vacation.
I don't mind being on it twice a day.
I'm not even going to touch that one.
I can't even... You can't do that at your age.
I'd be defending your wife.
Who are you kidding?
There's drugs.
6, 7
drugs.
Please.
Come on.
I'll leave you the, the evidence.
The cliff notes.
If it lasts for more than 4 hours, call more ladies.
Yeah, you're not taking advantage. Clearly, you're not using up all the gifts that God has given you now with that little blue pill.
Be like a little rat.
All right, so.
Go nuts for 2 weeks and then die.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Clearly, this is a at least a 20% alcohol beer, because the show has gone into the crapper. No, it's been a good show, I think. Let's do this. I know there's people listening. I know there's people with great questions in the chat room. One of the great things about the Brewing Network, all that other brewing content out there, not live. Brewing Network is done live. You can listen live. You can get into the chat room. You can ask questions. You can interact with the show. And, the stuff isn't edited, as you can tell. Because we're too lazy. No. Because it's important. Live radio is different than something that's produced. So, get in that chat room and ask your questions. Well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get to those questions right after this.
Where were we? You stole an oak barrel from the mist of Ravenwood, and Lord Zinfandel the Avenger is in pursuit. Do you drop the barrel and run?
Hell no.
We need it for a Flinders Red!
I'm gonna cast Pediococcus Damnathus on the barrel.
Sorry, your ghosts are imprisoned in his winery forever.
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
This sucks!
What do we have here, Orville Rodenbach?
Buzz off, guy! We got a brew session going.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you get a long-lasting foam stand when you think about wheat malt? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs. Ingredients, equipment, and knowledge at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping. Only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the pre-prohibition lager.
Perfect for steampunk.
And the single hop best bitter.
Now on cap and 10 forward.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go.
You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
This holiday season is one of gratitude, giving, and winning. More Beer says thank you to all their wonderful customers with deals from Thanksgiving through New Year's, in addition to low prices, free shipping, and the More Beer deal of the day every day. And one lucky customer is going to win Regan's Big Fat Package, the very first More Beer pressurizable conical fermenter. Rolling out just in time for the holidays, it's their brand new redesigned stainless conical line with a new threadless racking port, new stand options, and a new pressurizable lid. They're giving away one of these new pressurizable conicals on December 31st. For every order you place with More Beer between November 1st and December 31st, use the coupon code CONICAL up to once every day to enter yourself into the drawing. Go to morebeer.com for more details. The 2009 More Beer season of winning. Win yourself some great deals and maybe even a brand new conical fermenter. Enter today only at morebeer.com.
Have you ever noticed the pathetic look on the face of the brewcaster poster boy? That's the look of a child that survives on ramen noodles and homebrew. Subprime Meltdown doesn't even begin to describe what this kid has been through. He lives this grim existence for his army, the Brewing Network Army. Times are tough for everybody. It's like getting stuck in time 2 days before payday. Cash is tighter than a Post-it IOU stuck in a stripper's sweaty G-string. The unicorn's horn is limp and the rainbow has lost its color. But you can help change all that. If you were to take that sparkling change in your pocket and plop it on the table for the BN instead of that extra pint at happy hour, then the world could be a brighter place. When you buy a round for the BN, you buy a round for yourself and your fellow soldiers, and that's what it's all about. That and being entered into the reoccurring donor monthly raffle. So step up and start your own economic stimulus package. For just a few bucks a month, you can stimulate the unicorn, the rainbow, and a brewcaster. Hit that donate button just like you'd hit on that crazy bitch at the bar right after last call. You'll be really happy about it in the morning.
Hilo, what's your fuel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
And now, suck it, tasty.
All right, so during the break, the Brain Trust has been drinking. Oh, well, and thinking.
And peeing.
In that order.
Peeing, and Justin's been shaking hands. And one thought we came up with was, all right, now what are your alternatives on this? Now, I was saying, you know, this later portion is really just adding this high-gravity yeast and adding sugar and fermenting out that sugar as completely as possible to add a substantial portion of alcohol and leaving not a whole lot of residual sugar. You know, why couldn't you run these two ferments in parallel? So you pitch your 1056 cal ale yeast in the 94-based sugars, right? And then you
just
pitch
like a normal beer,
right? Your high gravity or your eau de vie in sugar water solution,
yeah, like a wash for distilling, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And ferment that out and you know, keep feeding that and get that going,
and then blend
the two back.
It would be an interesting process.
The great thing would be, I think you'd have more control over the.
But don't you think that there's some just incidental flavors that might be happening because of how we're treating
it? The combination of things, yes.
I mean, this technique, I think, is a really interesting with the incremental feeding, I think. Really wrap my head around it, you know, and actually think about not only just in this beer, but also like the worldwide stout.
Right.
And then what you could do with this to do other beers.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of our style.
And, you know, the one thing I would adjust to what I just said was maybe I'd add a little bit of the super high gravity to the main ferment with the cal ale and see if that'll dry it out a little further.
Put it in sooner, maybe?
Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even when you mix the simple sugar with the yeast and all that in that main ferment, it's the simple sugars that are getting consumed. The yeast stop.
They'll do the easy stuff first.
They keep focusing on, you know, all the simpler sugars, and maltose gets, you know, left behind. That's one of the reasons that you ferment that out first, is you want it to consume, you know, the maltose. Otherwise, it doesn't. If you have a certain percentage of sugar, well, the yeast are just not going to consume the maltose. They don't make the enzyme that allows them to break down the maltose into simpler sugars and utilize
Very
them.
True.
So,
and that's actually why I spent the extra time to really make sure that I did the step mash to really break down as much as possible.
Right.
Because that was the one thing that I was worried about, was the residual.
Mm-hmm. You still end up with a lot of maltose. I mean, the bulk of your sugars are all maltose. So that's one of the
But versus doing, you know, like a, I don't know, 154, 156, 158. Mm-hmm, you know, I mean, you would have a lot sweeter, of a finished.
Yeah, you
product.
Definitely want in the lower, right, mash temp range. And I think what Sean did, I think, you know, that works as well. And that's, you know, belt and suspenders, you know, not a bad idea in something like this. But I think, you know, that simple sugar has a separate, you know, like you're saying, a rum wash.
I think you need to go ahead and try that.
Yeah, I think that might work.
That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a situation where a home brewer can, you know, do it, take advantage of their, they can do that.
Right.
Commercially, they're not going to give up two vessels to
make that beer. You can't. So how would you do this, Tasty? I mean, what things have you heard?
Get a bottle of vodka and add it.
I'd be very tempted to put some portion of the sugar into the boil. Just to, just to kind of get all the yeast kind of acclimated to that sugar and maltose environment off the bat.
But wouldn't you be worried a little bit about, you know, like a stuck, you know, fermentation, just too much sugar, the yeast just saying,
exactly,
you know.
The yeast get lazy immediately.
I would have a pitch that would, yeah.
And they don't, because they it's don't just produce like, the enzymes
there's no way,
to
even
break
if
down
you
maltose.
Pitch just like the biggest, baddest, you know.
Not a lot of sugar, just a little, just enough to say it's in the environment.
Right.
Maybe 5%. Of your 40%.
Right.
Just a little bit. It's a token amount.
Just
to get it into the mix. Just to get the.
I see what you're saying.
It's like a chemistry kind of thing.
Right.
And then I would tend to then really push these sugar additions. You know, once the primary yeast was done, and I mean it had to be almost to a standstill, then I would be tempted to drop that dead yeast.
Right.
And then, you know, go with the other pitch.
And I would even add
another pitch of that.
You know, another pitch of the first
Both.
Yeast.
Yes.
Right. Getting it active again, right. High Croissant.
High gravity starter.
Right.
It could be in sugar as well. You could have a separate sugar starter with that yeast.
Yeah, you got to be careful of that. If you grow that yeast in sugar, they won't ferment maltose. So,
maltose would be gone, was what I'm thinking by the time you did that.
Right. Well, that's why I was thinking adding more of the high gravity to the original batch.
Go.
Maybe it would consume more of the maltose and help dry it out a little bit more.
But see, I was worried about flavor profile.
Right.
Because, I mean, you think about, like, Delirium Tremens, when they make that beer, they use three different yeast at three different times.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually what adds to that spiciness that you get in the final product. But that's not from...
I would agree with that, except... So I agree the fact that you use the three different yeast. But I think that, you know, if you add that and the sugar to the main ferment, it's still just fermenting those simple sugars. I think you ferment those simple sugars, you know, in a sidetrack. And when you end it back, you end up with the same thing as, you know, that it will ferment a little differently due to the stress from the alcohol that exists and the CO2 that exists.
So what about, like, if you were to pitch, like, you know, so it's about 4 or 5 days in, then pitching in the high gravity yeast, adding in the sugar right away, letting another day just to help finish up all the maltose before starting to introduce. Because, I mean, you think about it. I mean, 24 ounces of sugar every day.
Well, that's why I'm saying, you know, the rum wash.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, you know, maybe and start low and just keep building, you know, keep it a continuous, try and keep the gravity of the rum wash or the sugar wash track, you know, hanging around 1040 all the time, and you know,
once it starts to go up,
keep
then
taking
you stop.
Measurements and see when it gets, you know, when it starts to drop, and you know, just keep it in that sweet spot.
So I mean, once you're over 20%, I mean, there's no way you're gonna break it down any further, by adding in fresh yeast or anything else. Champagne yeast won't. I mean, everything else at that point is gonna be dead. So.
Short of enzymes.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
Well, and even the enzymes, I mean, they've, you know, the alcohol's toxic. I mean, you get to 5%, it's already toxic to the yeast. Hmm.
And so that's where I was really trying to, like, wrap my head around the 20%, 21%. I mean, you start thinking, just a big number.
Yeah. I mean, one advantage to adding to the back to the main batch is it's kind of a dilute for the, you know, if you ran the separate rum wash track, it's going to get to a higher alcohol percentage than if it was in the dilute of the main batch, because that's not going to get to as high a gravity. So there is some amelioration of the alcohol percentage.
I think you need to try that, and I'll try brewing it again.
So I think, you know, we're coming up with a lot of stuff
here.
We're going long on this show, but that's because we got a lot of good information.
I could just buy the rum and throw it in.
Or vodka.
Good information. Justin, what about the chat room? We got some questions there?
A ton of questions. This is one that's provoking a lot of thought in there.
All right, we're gonna go 4 hours on this one.
I like all those brewers thinking.
Could happen.
It's time for
thinking.
The meltdown already. Well, it was the meltdown an hour ago.
These are some really good questions, though, so maybe they'll keep us on task. Anthony wants to know, he's in there, he says, you know, why use all these different hops for the long boil additions? Do you really get different bitterness profiles from different hops, or does any of that come through as flavor? You know, why does it have to be different varieties for bitterness?
Some of it comes through in flavor.
Yeah.
I
mean,
well, you know, I think it's a twofold process, too, because, you know, usually our average boil is 90 minutes for an all grain. So you think about adding something like that in, you're not going to get any aroma, any flavor at all at that point. It's almost all bitterness. I'm not saying
side
that there
by side,
isn't.
There's a very slight difference. But, yeah, you're going the whole 120.
So you're going 2 hours now. Yeah. So you're thinking, like, you know, by
your last addition is
by the time you're an hour in, you put in half of your hops. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, how much flavor are you going to get there? But on the contrary, you're actually going to be getting a lot of aroma and flavor
from the last hour.
The last hour, because you're putting in all the way up to the very end,
right.
So it's not like you're putting everything in at the last 15 minutes and saying, you know, here you go.
Well, and I wonder if you couldn't get away with, you know, not doing all these, you know, 40 additions. You could probably get away with 10 additions.
That's what I was thinking.
And,
that
you could, you know.
Well, this is where, I mean,
know,
it's
at what
too,
point does that, it really
that in itself is its
away.
Own unique technique.
Right.
Because this is where I really tried to look at this as edumacation, you know, and really help educate myself as far as, you know, here we go by doing something. I've never done 40 hop additions on any beer before.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? In this room?
No.
And I've never
just throw in a pound at the end and I'm done.
And that's, I do, for a couple of my beers, I do that almost. I mean, I love that technique.
Mm-hmm.
But so right there, that was something interesting in itself.
I don't know.
I mean, it would be interesting to brew this beer like three different ways and do it, you know, one where it's 10 hop additions versus 40, one where it's all added at the end. Right. I mean. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, as I taste the 120, the real beer, which, of course, has had the continuous hopping, I mean, I don't notice that to be a better hop profile than a lot of other beers that just have, you know, three hop additions.
And you that's, know. I mean, is I mean, that if just it's there, a marketing
it's just not that noticeable. Well, it's, I don't know.
You know,
I mean, the heart of the hop is all we use. I
it's
mean,
being more
we, centered. We love Dogfish and we love Sam and all that. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that it necessarily makes, you know.
Well, even their 90 minute, I mean, I think that has a very different flavor profile than a lot of other beers. And it's not just because of the hops that they use.
Right, right.
I mean, again, I think that beer as well has actually changed since. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when it used to be in 750 bottles, and man, that was just like candy. It was just, oh. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a very interesting thing because to really think about technique and that, you know, it's not always that
and
we overlay
matters.
The same technique.
I'll tell you that. That's one of the things I always say is, you know, you have the same equipment, you have the same recipe. You put a different brewer in there, and the beer turns out different. The brew turns out different.
Yeah.
Why? Because of the technique of the brewer. So, you know, obviously that'll make a difference. All right. Next question.
All right. Bike Foolery. In fact, Bike Foolery's been hanging out in the chat room. He's got a lot of good questions. Mm-hmm. I liked every one of them. His first one was, would mash hopping or first wort hopping be applicable to this beer?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know
would
if
it
you're
do
really
anything for it?
It. I mean, unless you brewed it side by side, we'll never know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Let me get through.
With the 120 boil, that's it's going to be pretty much
you know,
plenty
mash,
hops going
scrubbed
you
out
know,
of there.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get through some of his other ones, too. Question about sanitizing your sugar additions. He ended up saying later that maybe the alcohol content was high enough that he sort of answered his own questions. But it's worth talking about.
Totally.
You didn't add them during the boil. You added them during fermentation.
Definitely.
Do you do anything to sanitize the sugar for this beer?
I did not.
Okay.
Outside of making sure that the pitcher and the whisk were all in Starsan, and I just basically... After use, I washed it really good, popped it back in the sanitizer, and I just had it.
You're not boiling. You're not doing anything. It's not necessary.
I thought about doing a simple syrup each time, but to do that 28 times, it just seemed like a lot of extra work.
Yeah.
And
well, you had a
you
job
could,
2 years ago.
You could make
ago,
one
so.
Syrup and store it, you know.
You couldn't do that.
Rub Mike, it in. Mike, and I know I'm a slacker.
Mike's suggestion is... You make one big syrup of all
well,
your
well, not
dextrose,
all 22 pounds,
right,
but, yeah.
but that's
or
the
whatever.
Thing, though, even
a couple
if you did that,
a couple of big ones,
you
and then,
could get an infection off that.
And then pour
well,
it.
Well, I'm talking about you
but
boil
here's
it.
The thing. Here's the thing,
even
though.
Even if you boil it and you have it sitting there, you're opening it and you're closing
well, then,
it.
I don't think so. All right. And here's the reason why.
Bring it on.
Okay. One of the reasons that honey and sugar tend to be so stable is that you know bacteria and wild yeast, they can't do anything on the surface. It's way too high a concentration of sugar. They're unable to survive there. And when sugar breaks down, it's because it oxidizes first, and which generates you know carbon dioxide and water, and it starts to dilute the sugar, and that's when you can start to have problems. But even then, it's very you know you can put sugar on yourself on a shelf. You know you can. I got a jar of sugar. I open it you know multiple times. I stick spoons in there, and that thing you know years go by, and it never really
no
goes
degradation,
bad, right?
Yeah.
Because as long as you're keeping the it's oxidation that breaks down sugar and honey and things like that, but bacteria and wild yeast tend not to survive off of that. So I think generally you're quite okay going with as long as you keep it in a very thick syrup that they can't ferment or
I mean that's where because
in its crystal form.
I mean I've done simple syrups where it's a 1-to-1 ratio, and I've actually had those go bad.
Right, right. Yeah, once you get thinned out, I think you thin out enough.
And this
then
is where I didn't want to take
hold.
Any but, risk. And also, again, re-talking about the idea of diluting, you know, I mean, I don't want to add any extra liquid.
I think that's a good point.
Well, yeah, you've got a volume factor. Issue.
My conical, you know, was holding 14.5 gallons.
Well,
and so.
But if you add a quart to 14.5 gallons, it really does have a considerable impact on your ABV and your gravity.
And not only just that, but also, too, it's just like, you know, I mean, I had 11, almost 12 gallons of wort in a 14.5 conical, and so just looking at headspace and everything else, and just all this work, and I mean, I just, because also adding in 22 pounds of sugar on top of that, I mean,
yeah, that has volume in and of itself.
Let me tell you, I mean, just picking up a 22
just
pound
dissolve and disappear
of sugar, that's a lot of sugar to add in. So that was my other issue, because I was thinking about some
of
that.
You've got all sorts of issues.
I know.
This is a complicated project, so it's going to have issues.
He's a complicated man. He's an artist.
Do you want me to lie down? Talk about my mother.
He's a food artist.
Next question.
Yeah. Jay Caravas, I hope I got the name right, has the same question as me. Why oxygenate more? And what are you getting? And then I have a follow-up to that. Is the rule I've always gotten from Doc around here is once you see fermentation begin, you do not oxygenate anymore. But you did it for 5 days, you said. So that's my fault. But Caravo says, why? Just the basics. Why do you have to oxygenate more for a beer like this?
Well, one, you're putting the yeast under such extreme conditions. I mean, we're talking, you know, like Jamil just said, after 5%, I mean, it's starting to become toxic to yeast. And all the way up to 20%. So, I mean, we're going to multiply that by 4. So you're going to add a variable where if you're not taking care of that yeast and helping to propagate it to help get the cell count that you need for the volume, because this is also what's really trippy about this beer is that since you're adding sugar continually twice a day for 14 days, you're changing that yeast. I mean, it's like, oh, man, we got to do it again. We got to do it again. We got to do it again. You know what I mean? It's like because we keep changing their environment.
Yeah, when they adapt, so, they stress. Yeah.
So you are stressing the yeast to almost an area where if you didn't do some of these things, that's probably where you'll only get an 18% beer. Okay. I mean, if I could have, I wish it could have gotten higher. I mean, look at Sam Adams and Dogfish Head about, you know, Utopias versus, you know, 120. I mean, you know, that extra 5% was, you know, a huge thing, you know.
No, okay. And one of the things, I think even Clayton Cohn, you know, when he was talking about high gravity beers and high gravity fermentations, you're actually good for like, you add oxygen to start, and then 12 to 18 hours later, you can do another dose of oxygen. But not past 18 hours. It's that whole growth period that
in
happens,
any beer,
right?
You're saying?
And what happens, and it's mainly for high gravity beers.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, what happens is, you know, you have your initial yeast, and let's say they're fat and healthy, they've got all the oxygen they want, they've got all the nutrients, they're in great shape, and they go off, and what they do is they bud, and they give up essentially half of everything they have to a daughter cell. And, you know, they'll give off a few daughter cells, and they're down to, you know, and that first daughter cell has half, right?
And then it has,
you know, it's half again, half again, and half again. You know, people go, oh, no, a yeast can replicate as many times as it wants, and one yeast cell will make a mutation, and that's the other thing. But that's not true. I mean, they really only go like 3-4 generations because they run out of all these things that actually make their cell walls pliant enough to bud off another cell.
It's like a California divorce.
That's right. It's like, how many California divorces can you go through?
Not many.
Now, if you're real successful and you get lots of cash or oxygen,
you
can go through a lot of divorces.
Okay. But still, eventually.
Yeah, once you're cutting half five times, you got much left.
It's like taking your skin off your body, stretching it, and generating another person. How many times can you do that before you run out of skin or your skin breaks, right?
Yeah.
You become fragile.
And each time you do, you end up with a scar. Now, yeast can bud and scar like up to 40 times, but reality is they're only going to do it like 3-4 times because they run out all these nutrients they need. Oxygen helps them build the sterols they need to replenish their that membrane that they needs to be pliant and needs to be healthy in order to keep the alcohol out for transportation mechanisms, a lot of different things. So that's what oxygen's used for and all these other nutrients. All right, so, you know, they've done a whole bunch of this budding and all that up to, you know, like 18 hours. That's where you're giving – they've already done that, and they're all kind of thinned out and kind of suffering, and now you're going to give them a whole bunch of alcohol to try and keep at bay on the other side of their cell – outside the cell, right? You're giving them more oxygen. It actually allows them to rebuild those cell walls, reinforce themselves. They pick up other nutrients from the wort. Now they're in better shape. Now you've got the population there, and they're in good shape, and they suck up that oxygen. you really don't want to do it too much past that because you increase the amount of VDKs that you're going to get. You know, there's off flavor compounds that come from that
mutation.
But you know, I really don't taste that in your beer. You know, there's not a whole lot off flavor there, but you do kind of get a plasticky hot alcohol thing if you're oxygenating past that 18 hours. And that's why Doc is saying don't do that, right? You know, give it at the beginning.
And for a mild and low right. alcohol beers, you
in
never
in this
want
case,
to do that.
If you're really chasing it, you need to hit it with oxygen. You know, between 12 and 18 hours as well. You need this big dose of oxygen during that time, or maybe a couple of times during 12 to 18. Yeah. Make sure you know those yeast are ready and ready to rip and plow through all that sugar that you provide them.
Because
and that should be enough. And then when you get to the wash. And the you know all the sugar additions and that high gravity yeast, you might consider it at that point.
There's
you know,
enough because that's also where I looked at it too. Is because you know you have such a high gravity anyway. How much is actually going to stay in suspension? You know because that's another factor. You know because
oxygen or
yeah because I mean you put that much oxygen in even with a 0.2 micron stone,
right.
How much is actually going to stay in suspension?
Yeah, and you know, and the stones don't really help. It's really it's oxygen on the layer, the surface layer, the wort. That's your surface that the oxygen comes in. The stone really just agitates the surface and helps. You know, when we add oxygen to carboy and stuff like that, you're filling that headspace with oxygen. And you're disturbing the surface, and that's really where the exchange comes in. The small bubbles that come up, it's better than big bubbles, but really it's a lot of it's absorbed. Once you've put the airlock on, it's absorbed from that headspace. You flushed it with oxygen, and that's where you get a lot of the oxygen that pickup that happens. And that's why you can really go a bit, you know, in smaller beers, you can actually go a little bit overboard on oxygen, right. Chad found out. All right. Next question.
Kind of related. A couple of people, Thunder Chicken in the forum, and Evan also in the in the chat room, asked about distiller's yeast. I didn't know there was a difference in distiller's yeast or
yes.
brewer's yeast, but something like that for a high gravity beer.
Well, the distiller's yeast is interesting. I don't know if anybody's ever tasted it, but it's not as desirable of a flavor profile. It actually produces a lot more ethanol, which is what you're looking at when you're looking at distilling,
okay.
Versus all the other types of alcohol that you can create during fermentation. Some of that adds to flavor. But the distiller's yeast and the eau de vie or the high gravity yeast is similar, but it's not the same.
Okay.
Like the turbo yeast and that kind of stuff, it's not as desirable to drink because since you're distilling it, you're leaving all that extra flavor behind.
Sounds like a headache, too.
Actually, less of a headache because there's higher amount of ethanol.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That gives you less. I see.
So because ethanol alcohols are really good.
Okay. All right.
Exactly. So that's why, like, Bud will give you a headache because they're stretching that yeast and they're actually making a lot more fossil alcohol.
Interesting. Okay. Thunder Chicken also wanted to know what size fermenter you used in this
So it was
process.
A 14.5-gallon conical.
Okay.
And that's why I doubled it. So
all right.
Less headspace, but then also I wanted to make sure I had enough, you know. Because also the way I looked at this beer, too, is that if I'm going to go through this much work and this much effort.
Yeah, make a big one. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, praise the Lord, man. So.
Well, and I've got a question for you.
You're making some like low alcohol beer. Just make a little bit. You know, and drink it real quick. You make something that you're going to age for 5 years.
You know, batch.
You got to make it enough that you can sample for 5 years and still have some at the end of 5 years.
And the way I looked at this is that I would have 2 6-ounce bottles every month for the next 10 years, or
that's,
four.
That's
bottles
just about right.
Or for 5 years.
Yeah.
So
that's just about right. Yeah.
And that's kind of where because I really
could
want
be
to
a
see 5 year this
beer easy.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean.
And 10-year.
What we just drank tonight was almost 4 years. So
thanks for bringing us some. That's very nice.
Yeah,
I love you guys.
Well, here's a good question.
Pull your pants back up.
Kind of related to that, the amount of effort. It was a comment made, but I think it's a question for you, Jamil. A web pro was in there. He said, I would think that with this beer, Jay-Z could do this beer without all the hoopla. three hop edition, some dry hopping, and then put it in the back of the walk-in for 3 years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm not sure he was just blowing smoke up your ass. But,
just blowing him.
Is this not a beer that could be simplified? Could the complexities of this beer be simplified? Or
well,
no, it has to be.
I think we kind of talked about that.
Do you want to take the risk?
I guess not, but...
I think you could.
Why are you brewing? I mean, that's what I guess my question.
Well, I think you could simplify the hop additions. Like Tasty was saying, like I was saying, I think you could dial them down a bit.
10 additions.
And I think down to 10.
Right, from 40 to 10.
Amazing.
I, you know, cut it by
that's
you know,
what the
four.
Really amazing.
I think you. I think you'd be hard pressed to notice a difference. And really, we're pretty critical because we want these things
no, we
to,
want
be
to be right.
Side by side. You're not sure which beer is which, and right. I'm with Tasty. I think maybe 10 you could get away with, and then I think you could get away with a parallel track of the yeast wash. Or the sugar, the rum wash.
Should we have a rematch?
And you could do that at any time, and then you brew your regular beer, and then you blend it, and you know, there you go. You're like, okay, there, I'm done.
Okay,
and you don't have to worry about you know, Trub or any of that stuff. I think you could simplify this at least a little bit.
But let me just ask the question. I mean, are we brewing because it's work or is this fun? And to me, this was a challenge.
Right. Oh, no, I agree. You do this because you can.
In this room.
Because it's so extreme and it's so out there. And but, you know, I got to give a nod to the guys who love the beer, but it's like they've actually got a job versus the rest of us where, Jesus, we can be on beer radio. So, you know. I got to give them a nod to that. I wouldn't hesitate to try and simplify, put it that way.
All right. How long was the D-rest for this beer size?
The what?
The D-rest, the diacetyl rest, I guess you said? Did you do something like that?
I never did one.
You didn't do it at all? You just let it finish out?
Okay. I mean, it's not a lager, so I just let it go and
it's all pretty warm.
Yeah, it's a pretty warm.
I mean, I never chilled it or anything else. I mean, I kept it about 66 to 70 the whole time, and then after fermentation... The signs of fermentation stopped. I gave it another 4 days before I took anything off.
See, I would crank up the temp at the end. I'd go
I did
ahead
mix
and,
it up. I mean, I did stir 70, my
72 and
my conical a couple times, and
hopefully getting the last bits of attenuation.
Rouse in the yeast,
and that would work as a de-rest as well.
Yeah. Okay.
I did have a thermowell in the center with a firm wrap on the outside, and all dialed in with the.
And you
the
had
right
your probe in there.
I had the probe.
It was deep
in there.
Inside the.
As deep as it would go.
That's good. Right. Sometimes it'll only go so far.
When you hit the bottom, you know.
I don't know. I've heard that. Out.
We're talking Paxton here. I mean, it goes all the way from Paxton.
All right. Phil Brazil, one of our Brazil listeners, Brazilian listeners. Wouldn't it be better not to have 0 minute hops and just put all that into the dry hopping? What sort of flavors do you get with that 0 to 5 minute hop that you don't cover up or not get with dry hopping?
Well, but here's the thing, okay? Mm-hmm. So even when you turn off the boil, you have enough sugar and everything else in there that you're at 212 degrees for at least 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you get isomerization down to like
105, so it's still happening.
170 some odd.
Think about coffee
you're still
and
getting
tea, you know?
Isomerization.
Yeah.
So it's still bittering, actually.
Okay.
That's one of the things about, you know, if you're quickly chilling the entire volume, then you're going to trap more aromatics and more flavor and get less isomerization. If you're sitting there, like a lot of the pro brewers, and again, Mike and I, we're constantly, you know, asking these brewers,
totally.
How long do you whirlpool?
How long do you rest? Yeah.
Right, and that, you know, that kind of tells you, well, where you should throw your hops in. When they say, oh, I throw it in the whirlpool, then we're thinking, okay, 15 minutes sound about right,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you know, that hot wort really will drive off the volatiles, it'll isomerize, there's a lot of little tricky things going on there. So,
especially 50 barrels. I mean, that's right, going to stay right. Versus 10 gallons. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And I think what, you know, Sean was getting to is... yeah, that 0 minute addition is important, and you were saying this earlier, Sean, that first 60 minutes, yeah, maybe you could consolidate that down into, you know, two hop additions in the first hour.
But that is going to change some of your...
The last hour is really more important.
I mean, it's interesting, too, because we really try to figure out, like, what is the IBUs of this beer?
Uh-huh.
I mean, to really do the math by 40 additions, 60 additions every minute, I mean, that's where it's really going to start to change because, I mean, if you put in all your hops, or if you divided your hops into two different batches, the first hour and the second hour. Mm-hmm. The first hour, you did all your hops at the first, you know, right when it comes to boil, pop them all in, let it boil for an hour, and then break it down, you know, to eight different additions for the next hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that might be interesting, too. But then, are you going to get too much bitterness? Because, you know, having...
Tasty will dial it in.
Tasty what?
Tasty will do this with one hop addition.
Yeah.
No. One hop addition and...
And a hop back.
And hop back. And he's done.
But that's where I just think about the technique of the idea of continual hopping versus doing what we normally do.
I think it could be simplified. I think you know, again, you average out, right? As long as you're averaging out across time.
True.
Yeah.
Especially that first hour. First hour, three additions max.
But still, I mean... Right? When it's all said and done, there was a shitload of hops in the bottom of that.
Right. But, you know, so you take that first hour instead of 20 additions during the first hour.
Yeah.
You have, you know, a third of them
every
at,
20 minutes.
You know, you have seven additions at the very beginning and a seven additions at, you know, middle in, right. You know, in half hour in and then seven additions, you know, at an hour. Sean is, you know, because Sean will, like, spend... 2 days making the perfect puff pastry or whatever, you know, or he'll spend you know, a week curdling some cream in exactly the right way to make.
yeah.
Now I must say, I've eaten Sean's food and felt like I should have sex with the empty plate afterwards.
Yeah. You bowed down.
I've seen you have sex
dinner.
With the empty plate afterwards.
I bowed down and kissed his feet. If not.
More than once,
you know, many times. So,
which is very flattering, by the way.
And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for the process that's involved in these things, and you know, there's something to be said for that. You know,
I mean, to me, that's
dosing every minute. Yeah, you know, that's.
Because
it's,
I mean,
a
this is where
too. You know,
I mean, this isn't your standard beer. I mean, you're not going to brew this beer three times a month. I mean, if you do, you might have an alcohol problem.
Well, too much of it. Yes,
you take that back.
It's like getting a canvas, and well, I can slap paint on it and have it painted. Have paint on a canvas within 5 minutes, right?
Won't be a Picasso,
right? And you know, but you know, take you know, a year and you know, microfine brushes and. Put, you know, a couple of...
You see a difference. No, I get what you're saying,
you know,
sure.
The finest drop of paint, and you, in the grand scheme of things, you do see a difference. There's a huge difference between those two. And those little fine strokes, maybe you don't identify every little fine stroke, but the overall impression can be significant. So what we're doing is actually... For this show, we're going to go 120 minutes for the 120 minutes.
It looks like it. Yeah, I like it.
We're only 7 minutes away from making it. So
I have another good question if we can get one more in with our 7 minutes. Scotes has written in. It's more dry hopping questions, too.
We may go 140.
Uh-oh.
We just have to top dogfish. This is a good question. Since high-gravity beer like this will need to be aged for a little while and hop aroma and flavor drops out over time, is there a benefit to aging the beer for a few months before doing the dry hopping? So instead of dry hopping right after fermentation, maybe you wait until 2 weeks before serving.
You know, you make a difference. That's an excellent... See,
I like this question.
People thinking. I do, too. I do,
that's a good question.
This is the type of thing that, you know, I don't think I would have thought of. You know, and why the listeners are so important to the show, and I think you make a different beer and a hoppier beer, and I think you know, the one thing I would quibble with is that this is a beer for aging. I bet, you know, there's people drinking this Dogfish 120 when it comes right out of the brewery.
There's
no chance,
and it's a different beer, but
I mean,
you know,
on the label it says ages well.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't drink it that day.
Well, and this is the other thing, too, is that, okay, so if you let the beer sit for, let's say, 4 or 6 weeks before you started to dry hop it.
Mm-hmm.
Really make sure it's clear, everything else, and you start adding that in. And by the time you're done dry hopping and then letting that sit in there even that much longer, you're going to tie up your conical for a good 2-3 months.
Well, you're also, you know, one of the things I like about dry hopping right at the end of, you know, fermentation or even during fermentation is that any oxygen in the pellets or in the leaf
is absorbed.
It can deal with it better. If you're adding that oxygen after everything's done and the yeast is really dormant or passed and, you know, and taken out of solution, then you might get a more oxidation. Yeah. I don't think it's a bad idea, though.
I don't think so. I think you're right that you get a different beer. I think it's a fascinating idea. I mean, what if you dry hopped your beer? It's been sitting around for 4 years right now. I think it'd be interesting to taste what came out of there.
Right.
Well, it is interesting, too, because I've been playing a lot with...
good idea.
I like it, yeah.
High alcohol spirits in a neutral flavor and adding that to hops and making hop extracts.
Yeah.
And adding that into things. It does change.
Yeah. All right, Scotes. Great question.
Great question, yeah. I agree.
All right, Evan, also in the chat room, has a question about...
These have all been really good questions.
Yeah, they're really thinking about this beer.
Must be because it's a Monday. They're not drinking. Oh, what's the matter with these folks?
Could be that. He wants to know about what if we did something like the methods of an ice bock with this beer?
Freeze concentrate it?
Yeah, so in order to get that high gravity, you see what I mean? Instead of doing it all with yeast right in the beginning,
your volume is actually a lot less.
Well, yeah, but would you maybe get the profile without all the trouble with the yeast?
The only problem is, all right, so I think that would work, and actually it would kind of resolve the issue with, you know, making a syrup of the sugar before adding it. But even syrups, you need to be real careful because that syrup will travel straight. You can pour a syrup into a liquid.
Oh, yeah,
it will drop straight to the bottom and flatten out and cover your yeast. You know, unless you're going to mix it in. So, you know, you might as well be sprinkling, you know, granular sugar in there as well as that syrup. So I don't know that will really help making a syrup now that I think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But...
could be more detrimental.
I think Paxton's...
But the ice distilling, though, it's interesting because I actually took Blind Pig and I ice distilled it 4 times to make a stronger version, and I used that as a cooking medium for oysters. And it was really interesting, though, because doing that, I lost probably a good... I don't know, probably 5/8 of the volume from the ice. And I know that you do lose some of the alcohol as well as some, because even
because afterwards, the ice forms little slivers.
It does. And it was actually a real trip to taste because how much you got of the hop bitterness in
you
the
really
ice.
You really need to let that ice melt a little bit, and then the liquid that runs down.
Yeah, drain it really well.
But even then, how much hop... residue was in that
gets
ice.
Gets trapped in the ice.
And so I don't know if that would really change the final profile.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. You're going to end up with, you know, concentrating the sugars, you concentrate the hops, you concentrate, you know, and you eliminate some of the flavor compounds. That ice that you cut out is always brown, you know, and with hops, with, you know, melanoidins, with a lot of different things. So... it would make a different beer. It really wouldn't be the way to... It would work,
but
it's going to be a different beer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Icebock is great. Mike makes a great Icebock.
but it does tend to be a little sweeter than in proportion.
Right. Exactly.
To the original beer. Obviously, it's going to be more concentrated everything.
Right.
But it's out of balance sweet, I think, the Icebock.
I don't think you could really reach this beer through ice concentration.
No,
I don't think it would work.
No, I don't think so at all.
If you're trying to clone it.
You'd be going the wrong direction.
If you're trying to make a great beer, I mean, certainly you could do that, but... Right. Trying to clone it, no.
All right, another question. Disco Fetus wrote in.
Disco Fetus.
Was yeast nutrient mixed into each sugar addition?
Only the first 5 days.
So every time you did sugar for the first 5 days, you also put in yeast nutrient?
Yeah, I used some servomyces from my yeast and opened up the capsules because I was worried about them actually dissolving completely.
Yeah, they won't in a beer.
Yeah, so open those up independently, mix it in with the sugar, so that way it was fully distilled in or mixed in. So that way...
So that's one pill every day for 5 days you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, it's not a cheap beer.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and one more question. You guys had mentioned during the show the Crabtree effect, and you mentioned it like we
got
all
30
knew.
30 seconds.
Mentioned it all like we knew what it was. Can you explain the Crabtree effect and close the show in 30 seconds?
No.
it's a basic question.
It's essentially...
Epic fail.
You know, the amount of glucose, the amount of oxygen, you know, with oxygen present, the, yeast is growing and, not fermenting, amount of glucose overrides, it's a certain percentage and...
Sounds very simple.
Yeah, essentially, Chris White told me it never really happens.
Okay. That's all you need to know, then.
So I spent like a day writing up 500 words in the upcoming yeast book,
and then he told you to suck it.
And he was like, "Well, I'm like, why are we covering this if it doesn't really happen?" He goes, "Yeah, it doesn't really happen.
Ah,
but people are interested.
Well, they are."
He said, "Yeah." He said, "There's lots of proof that it never actually really occurs because what happens is the yeast." Yeast are always breaking down the maltose into, the simple sugars. So,
okay.
There's always a high enough concentration to not make it happen.
All right. Not only is that all the questions from the
chat.
2 hours.
But 120 minutes.
My glasses are empty. So, 120 minutes, fellas.
Woo-hoo! 120.
Good job.
Don't you love it when I'm on the show, Justin?
I do, Pax. It all goes by quick.
Well, and speaking of quick, I guess that's...
Tasty's in the room.
What's Tasty with quick have to do?
Get it?
I got it.
Never mind.
No, I don't get it.
I was stretching.
I don't even get it. I'm Tasty.
And the fact that you get it.
Yeah.
Or you said it.
In your own mind.
It was good.
You get it. All right. That was good. All right. You can hear the little applause inside Justin's head going...
We're going to add that later.
Good show again, everybody. I'll add the room applause later on.
Thank you very much. All right, so if you're out in Milwaukee, go ahead and make sure you get there next weekend. We're going to be down there. Justin and I, we're going to do a show.
Yeah.
We're going to do a book signing. We're doing a brewing. Unfortunately, Tasty,
put your shirts on.
Tasty's not going to be there with us.
I'll be there in spirit.
He'll be there in spirit. He'll be drinking to go along with us.
And just one thing real quick.
And if you
this is actually on my website.
Yeah.
This recipe is actually on my website.
All right.
If people ever want to look at it at homebrewchef.com.
Oh,
and, make sure that you get a chance to check out the Brewing Network store. We've got shirts. We got books. We got glassware. We got hats. We got all sorts of great stuff in there. And every purchase you make goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network. Keeps these shows going. Keeps them going strong. And, make sure you hit our great sponsor, Northern Brewer. They make this show possible. We love them. You should love them, too. Anyways, until our next show, make sure you're out there. Brew a beer for you. Brew a beer for someone else. And most important of all, brew strong.
And often.